It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. Today on the show, significant others. Who matters most to us in our lives? We start with a different kind of love story.
It does feel a little like a movie cliche that I spotted her across the room at a bar, and I knew I wanted to talk to her just from her body language.
This is journalist Raina Cohen. She had recently moved to D.C. when she met someone you might call her soulmate, who she refers to as M.
She was leaning in, was making people laugh, and I could feel the confidence from her and also lightness. And I eventually struck up conversation, had what could have been a pickup line where I was like, "You're a singer, aren't you?" Because she has this voice that is melodic. Anyway, we just talked to each other very quickly and then found out we lived a 5-minute walk from each other.
And before long, the two of them were inseparable.
We'd see each other 3-4 times a week. I would stop by her house on the way to the metro when I was commuting to work. We were just really integrated into each other's lives.
They'd hang out all the time, cook together, share stories, ideas.
I think I just wanted to know everything she thought, kind of at all times. She just has a way of observing the world and observing human dynamics that I wanted to absorb.
They even went to each other's office holiday parties. Raina often caught herself mentioning M in conversation.
It felt very quickly like I had fallen for her in a way that felt familiar, because I had fallen in love before.
Yeah, because when you describe that, I mean, it sounds like, she had charisma that you were attracted to. You guys had chemistry.
Yeah, but it was a platonic kind of love. It just didn't feel like what was driving the connection was something that was sexual, something that had a kind of conventional romantic relationship undertone.
I mean, part of me thinks, that is so beautiful. That's so nice. You have this incredible relationship, almost like a sister, it sounds like. But it also ended up leading you on a kind of journey to write a best-selling book about connections that push the boundaries of what we typically think of as a friendship. And was that in part because people were confused by your friendship with M? What prompted you to start investigating these intense platonic relationships?
Yeah, I wanted to find other people who had these sorts of friendships. And initially, I just kind of wanted to affirm them. I was upset by the idea that people's closest relationship would not only not be celebrated, but instead judged. Mm-hmm. And some of the early people I spoke to felt like their friendships were completely misunderstood, where they were gossiped about, where, you know, they were accused of being closeted, that they were actually in love with each other. And some of that happened in workplace settings. I mean, at least in the case of me and M, we had people being like, "How do you get this?" So it wasn't just
they were jealous of the closeness that you had.
They wanted a version of it.
We should point out that you were are married to a man. So what did he think about this new friendship?
Very happy on my behalf. I mean, he's just not a very jealous person. And you know, in the way that that the two of us think about what our ideal romantic relationship looks like, it is one where we welcome other close people into it. And so he was happy that I had, you know, just come to this new city and I had pretty quickly found my way, in part because I had found this person who really made my life feel grounded in D.C. I want people to realize that friendship can be much bigger and deeper and more significant to our lives than we've been told it can be, and to open our imaginations when we're approaching the friendships in our own lives, to not set unnecessary limits on them.
Why do so many of us still believe that finding the one should be the goal of an adult life? Are there other options? How do we decide who to share our lives with? Today on the show, our significant others. All we need from a life partner, whether that's a friend, a spouse, a dog, or no one else at all. So back to journalist Raina Cohen. Her book, The Other Significant Others, Reimagining Life with Friendship at the Center, really struck a chord with readers.
I'm interested in the questions that these historical friendships raise and how they can help us stretch the boundaries of what friendship is and kind of question a little bit what we think about romantic relationships.
Some of the friends that I spoke to had this friendship occupy the space that's conventionally given to a romantic partner.
Here's Raina Cohen on the TED stage.
Some had this kind of friendship and a romantic partner. It's not either or. As I spoke to these people, I realized that they were at the frontier of friendship, helping us imagine how much more we could ask of our platonic relationships. Which is true, but another way of looking at it is they're doing something retro, even ancient. In ancient Rome, friends would talk about each other as half of my soul or the greater part of my soul, the kind of language we now use in romantic relationships. From China to Jordan to England, there was a practice called sworn brotherhood, where male friends would go through a ritual that would turn them into brothers. About a century ago, friends would sit for portraits like these, with their arms wrapped around each other, their bodies up close. What I took from this history is that if we don't limit friendship, it can be central to our lives.
And so for me, looking at sworn brotherhood provokes questions about why we think about friendship the way we do now, where it is basically disposable, where you think of it as maybe temporary, or it's something that you stuff to the side of life, where what we see in friendships throughout history is that they were publicly recognized in ceremonies, like with sworn brotherhood, where some of the most intense emotions that we think of only as existing in romantic relationships, in fact, existed in friendships.
I mean, a lot of people would say, like, well, when you find that person who you can, you know, tell everything to, you marry them. That's what marriage is.
It's a very historically recent idea. I mean, like, we're talking last, like, 50, 60 years, the idea that your spouse should be your best friend is... It's a beautiful thing to have elements of friendship within a spousal relationship, that marriage isn't just pragmatic, but that you can find somebody who really knows you in your depths. But, you know, I don't think there's just one person who can know you in that way. And I think it's great to be able to have, you know, something wonderful or hard in your life and to feel like there is more than one person you can call and more than one person who can support you. And I think that's a very different mentality that can make it possible to have sustained friendships throughout the kind of challenges and seasons of our life.
And the kinds of friends that I spoke to, they don't just have a weekly phone call. They're friends like these. Natasha and Linda are the first legally recognized platonic co-parents in Canada. Joe and John have been best friends for many decades. When Joe was struggling with alcohol and drug use, John got him into recovery. And then John decided that to support his friend, he would also become sober. Joy took care of her friend Hannah during Hannah's six-year battle with ovarian cancer. And that included flying out to New York, where Hannah got specialized treatment. Joy had trouble actually sleeping overnight in the hospital because she was too busy watching to make sure her friend's chest was still rising and falling.
There's a moment that you describe where Joy tells the people in the hospital that she is Hannah's wife just so that she can spend the night and be with her friend who is dying. And we should be clear, it's not like Hannah didn't have a family. She has a husband. But there's a moment where you also say that Hannah's husband and her mom were at the hospital a ton, and Joy was home taking care of the kids. It just felt like, wow, how great to have another loving adult on the scene to help in a terrible crisis for this family.
I think so many people want more support in their lives. And when things go wrong, it is not just, you know, emotional support that you can get from someone who is by your bedside when you're in the hospital, but also that you have another set of hands to help at home. Or, I mean, there's a moment where it is Joy and Hannah's mother who are trying to make a decision jointly about whether to have an ambulance come. And they were able to kind of make that really hard decision together. I mean, I still like think about Joy saying that after Hannah died, like she can't believe the world still spins when she's not here. Mm-hmm. I mean, that and talked about Hannah as a soulmate. And so I wanted to help people understand how significant a loss can be in a friendship. And then, you know, connected to that is how little it's recognized and how that makes the grief worse.
So keeping all this in mind, what is your living situation right now?
I live with my husband and also two of our closest friends. I think what's surprising to people is not just that we're living with friends, but that it's not for cost saving. We've done it because we've chosen to. I feel like I get to live in a future world where you can just build a life with your friends. I live not only with my husband, but also two of my closest friends. It didn't take long for us to start scheming with about a half dozen other friends about trying to buy property together. The kind of place where we could raise kids alongside one another. Our working title for the place is The Village. I don't know if this will work out. I can keep you posted about it, but if it does, I feel really confident about one thing. That if one of us has a migraine at 6 a.m. and there's a toddler bouncing around, or we get a terrifying diagnosis, we will not be a lonely person calling out only for no one to answer. And this is what I hope for all of us. That we feel like we have permission to share our lives with whoever we are lucky enough to find. Whether that's a spouse, a sibling, or a house full of friends. Thank you.
That was journalist and NPR producer Raina Cohen. Her book is called The Other Significant Others, Reimagining Life with Friendship at the Center. You can see her full talk at TED.com. On the show today, our significant others. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. We'll be right back.